Hello, this is Rob Gellis. I'm talking today to Peter Young, who has the Peter Young Fine Art Gallery. He's an art dealer in Hudson. He's been here for a long time. And Peter, I want to thank you so much for inviting me over to your gallery.
Welcome. So I came to Hudson about 32 years ago, 1990. When Hudson was just beginning to sort of wake up from its sleepy time. I had been in the Midwest originally. I'm from Minnesota. And I had not been involved with art. I didn't know anything about the Hudson River School of Painting. I didn't have any experience. I was in the violin trade. I dealt in violins. And some folks might remember that in about 1986, we had a huge, wet, heavy snowstorm that devastated the Hudson Valley. The snow built up on the trees, and the trees couldn't handle the weight, and it broke branches. The Hudson Valley looked like it had been hit with a nuclear bomb. And a friend of mine had a tree service business, and he got the contract to clean up Olana, the beautiful property just south of Hudson where Frederick Church lived in the 19th century. And I helped him work on those trees, which had been badly damaged by this snowstorm. And the director of the site at that time was a fellow named Jim Ryan. And we were taking a lunch break, and Jim said to us, "Would you guys like to see the inside of the house?" So we went inside, we set down our chainsaws and got a tour of the house, and it was just spectacular. I had never seen anything like it. And within a day or two, I was down at the Met and the New York Historical Society looking at Hudson River School paintings down in the city. And that was sort of the beginning for me. It happened so immediately, I can't explain it. It was almost like a religious transformation. I was exposed to all that great artwork and that beautiful, you know, that exotic interior of the Olana home. And it just set me on a course of being absolutely passionate about the Hudson River School. Even though I had no prior knowledge, I had no art history background, I just went at it the best way I could. And here in the Hudson Valley, we have a lot of auctions. There are a lot of antique auctions on a weekly basis. So I started visiting those auctions, buying little things here and there. And I got lucky at one point and did pretty well on a painting, which was quite encouraging. But for me, the last 32 years has been pretty much a big treasure hunt. And I've spent a ton of time driving around, seeing other dealers, visiting galleries, going to auctions, museums. I typically put anywhere from 40 to 50,000 miles on a car in a given year, so I get around. I've learned a great deal. I've got a wonderful conservator by the name of Yost Conservation. They're over in Connecticut. And a lot of the pictures that I get require some level of cleaning and touch-up and conservation. So I see them on a pretty regular basis, and I enjoy that experience. One of my favorite things to do is jump in the car with a couple of pictures that are dirty and in need of restoration and bring them to the conservator and pick up the clean ones. I think he and I have done something like 1,200 pictures over the years that have been, you know, brought back into good health, properly framed. Also, framing is a big part of the experience. When you get the right frame on a picture, it really matters. So I spend quite a bit of time trying to frame paintings properly. And right here in my block, in the fifth block of Warren Street, there's a wonderful frame shop run by a fellow named Ami Rebar. And above him is a German gal named Tanya McGivney, who has tremendous frame conservation skills. So right here in my own block, I've got really great framing resources, and I work with them quite often.
So, obviously that you're bringing, brought you here, to Olana brought you here, but then you got exposed to the art and you started your journey.
I did serve on the board at Olana as well. I served back in, the early 90s. I served on the board for 3 years. And they're doing so well right now. And of course, right across the river from Olana is Thomas Cole's home. And Thomas Cole is often thought of as the grandfather of the Hudson River School. And both of those houses were kind of sleepy and dormant when I first came here, but now they have terrific management and good board of directors. They're raising plenty of money. They have wonderful exhibitions. They have lectures and other events. Both of those houses are doing extremely well, and I'm really happy to see it.
Something brought you learned who the artists were, and a local one I knew about was Sanford Gifford.
Mm-hmm.
I knew his paintings. I've seen a few at the church house myself.
Yes.
And then I'll let you discuss further how you got involved with Sanford Gifford.
Sanford Robinson Gifford was born in 1823, and his father, named Elihu, I'm not quite certain how it's pronounced, had an iron foundry here in town. They made heavy cast iron goods like frying pans and shovels. There's even a couple of sewer caps in the streets here with the Gifford brand on them. So he grew up in a beautiful Italianate mansion, which no longer exists, at the corner of 6th and Columbia, where we have the farmer's market on Saturday mornings. Unfortunately, that house was bulldozed in the 1850s, or 1950s, and that was tragic. It was just an absolutely beautiful home. I have photos of it. So Gifford grew up here in Hudson, traveled to Europe and studied over in Italy, and as many of the Hudson River painters did. And he's what's called a second-generation Hudson River painter. He's not one of that very, very first group, along with Cole, who started in the 1820s. Gifford comes along later. But he's a spectacularly great painter. I like him because he doesn't exaggerate the landscape. He pretty much paints the truth, which is nice. He doesn't give you mountains or sunsets that are over the top and ridiculous. And he's very sought after. A major Gifford painting could be a couple million bucks these days. They're a big deal. I've handled a couple of smaller examples in my days. It's interesting that when I first came to Hudson, I kind of thought that if I opened up a gallery here, some of this great Hudson River material would come walking in my front door. And that has not turned out. I'm still waiting for the sweet little old lady to come in the door with a great painting. And it took me a while to understand it. Those great artists, Church, Cole, Gifford, they were never selling their paintings up here in the country. They had wealthy clients and collectors who they were selling to in New York and Hartford and Boston, New Haven, places like that. So those paintings were not widely distributed in Columbia County. If we're lucky, we might find a little sketch or some sort of preliminary drawing or something. But the great important Hudson River paintings were expensive in their day. They were thousands of dollars even in the 1850s. So that material is not bubbling up out of grandmother's cupboard up here in Columbia County. So I'm still waiting for that to happen. But Gifford is a great one. The real connoisseurs of Hudson River paintings hold Gifford in very high esteem. So about 8 or 9 years ago, I was walking through our local cemetery with a friend and her dog, and we're just taking a walk because the cemetery is a pleasant place to spend some time. And I came up to a whole plot of Giffords, about 22 of them, all of them in bad shape. The stones tipped over, neglected. There was no maintenance of the site at all. And I thought, gee, is it possible that this is the Gifford family? And I walked up to a stone, and sure enough, there he was, Sanford Robinson Gifford. He was kind of buried under a bush right next to his wife, Mary. A few of the stones were cracked and broken. A number of them were tipped over. And I nearly had a heart attack. I thought, my God, this is the great Gifford. And nobody's paying attention to his gravesite. So I called one of my best art clients, a really good fellow here in Columbia County. And the next day, he came down and wrote me a pretty substantial check to get going on the conservation of the site. And I found a brilliant young stonemason by the name of Aldo Lavaggi. Aldo had grown up down near Woodstock, working with blue stone and other stone. And he spent about 4 months up at the gravesite and got it all beautifully put back together. He did a fabulous job. And I put up a little sort of blog about it. You can Google it. If you search for Gifford's grave, you'll see the little website that I put up. And so now Gifford, his family plot is in good shape. And what this did, is to help trigger a bit more interest in our beautiful old cemetery. Because our cemetery was designed according to the principles of the rural cemetery movement, which is something I had no idea about. It's a really cool idea. In the 1820s, 30s, 40s, the big European cities like Rome, Madrid, Paris, Berlin, they were having a problem with too many corpses stacking up in cemeteries. The cemeteries were right in the central city, and it was literally a public health issue. So they decided, let's build brand new cemeteries out in the country, outside the city. That's where the term rural cemetery comes from. And the brilliance of this notion is that they said, if you're going to put a cemetery, a brand new cemetery, out in the country, why not make it a beautiful place like a park? So you have a winding path and beautiful architecture and pools and ponds and benches, and make it an attractive place so that people would actually rather use it as a living space as opposed to thinking of it as a dark and scary place for the dead. And it's a really wonderful concept. So that notion spread to the United States, and we have some of those here in the Northeast. The most magnificent one is in Boston. It's called Mount Auburn, and it's just amazing. It's got a big citizens auxiliary group that supports it. It's just fabulous. There's a great one up in Troy called Oakwood. And our little cemetery, which needs millions of dollars worth of renovations, is a kind of small version of that. But the idea is, let's use our cemeteries as parkland rather than avoid them. And so the discovery of Gifford's grave, I think, has helped to trigger in some people the notion that we ought to start spending time in our cemeteries. Take a walk, hang out with your dog or your kids or whatever, read a book, and use the cemetery. And I think it's a lovely concept. So to the extent that Gifford's grave has helped to stimulate that, you know, that movement, I'm very pleased about it. So Gifford is, he's probably, of all the Hudson River painters, he's probably the one I feel closest to, partially because he grew up a block from the gallery here. And by the way, I shouldn't forget Henry Airy. If we were to go out in my front door, to the right, just one door, at 508 Warren Street, was a fellow named Henry Airy. Last name is A-R-Y. He came here from Rhode Island in the 1840s, and he opened up a little art supply shop, and he taught painting right here on Warren Street. He was Gifford's first teacher, and his pictures pop up. He painted South Bay and Mount Marino down here quite often. He's a little on the folky side. He's not as polished as some of the Hudson River painters who studied in Europe, but his pictures are very charming. And I often wonder if Frederick Church, Gifford, Thomas Cole, some of these other people weren't actually coming and buying their paints and canvas and brushes right here a door from my shop. So I can't prove it, but it's possible. He had an art supply store right here on the main street.
And now there's one down just below it, the Spotty Dog.
Spotty Dog, yes, yeah.
So
yeah.
And I didn't know that Hudson had one over 100 years ago.
Yeah, it came here in the 1840s. And I've handled probably 5 or 6 of his paintings. And he's, like I said, he's not one of the high priests of Hudson River School painting, but he's a good one. And he has a place in history because of the fact that he was here, taught Gifford, and I'm sure he knew Church and all those guys. They must have spent time together. Who knows, they might have gone on painting and sketching trips together. Artists often did that. They'd go out together and spend an afternoon painting and sketching together. But the Hudson River School of Painting is something that isn't as widely known as I wish it were. I grew up in the Midwest, never heard of it. It wasn't taught in schools, not a mention of the Hudson River School of Painting. It wasn't until I happened to get lucky and stumble into Olana because of a winter snowstorm that I even learned about the Hudson River School. I keep thinking it would be fantastic if Ken Burns would do one of those documentaries. You know, he's done the Civil War and jazz and baseball and other things like that. And he does a spectacular job with these documentaries. wouldn't it be great if he took on the Hudson River School? Because it is so integrated into American culture. There were three big things happening while the Hudson River School painters were at work. The Civil War, which of course impacted everyone. The spreading out of the railroads across the country, which completely changed, that was a game changer. The Erie Canal, which was an economic boon to the United, or to the northeastern United States. And then the movement of settlers out of the Northeast, where farming wasn't so easy, on this rocky, hilly, treed country, moving westward towards Ohio and Minnesota and the Wisconsin, the Dakotas, where farming was much more viable. So this all happened at a time when the Hudson River painters were at work, you know, and America was flexing its muscles and moving westward. So if someone like Ken Burns were to take on the documentary, it would be an easy one. Number one, all the imagery is already there. We've already got all the imagery.
Is it possible to approach his organization?
I do have one connection. I know a musician who has a connection to him through Ken's series on the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if they took on that challenge, the imagery is all there. It's all documented. There's 100, 200 books about the Hudson River School. The scholarship is done. I think the big challenge would be to somehow tell the story of it in a way that made it meaningful and integrated it into the story of American history. And it would just be spectacular. Plus, the visuals would be so stunning and wonderful. You know, there's nothing more attractive than showing a luminous painting. The other thing that I should mention is that if you were an American living in the Northeast, let's say New York or Pennsylvania, in the 1840s, 50s, 60s, it wasn't necessarily easy for you to know what the rest of the country looked like. You didn't have cell phones and TVs and laptop computers to transmit all that imagery into your life. So the Hudson River painters, to some extent, we're helping America discover its own landscape. And somewhere here I've got a beautiful book called, what's it called? It's in the back, doggone it. Anyway, it's a beautiful book that was published in the 1860s where the editor of the book commissioned 150 different artists to go out into the United States and come back with these pen and ink drawings. And so this is a way for Americans living here in the Northeast who had never seen the Grand Canyon or the Rockies or Glacier or any of the grand scenery of the West, the Mississippi Valley. And the other way that this material is important, and the other reason Hudson River painters deserve a lot of credit, our legislators in Washington had never been to these magnificent natural settings. So to establish the national park system, they relied to a large extent on the imagery being brought back by these painters. And so the establishment of the national park system was not easy. They were fighting against logging interests, mining interests, other competing commercial interests. And to get that park system established was no easy thing. But the imagery was so spectacular and so wonderful that the legislators in Washington were able to get it done. Now, the Hudson River School of Painting kind of went into a long, quiet period of decline, sort of between, I would say, 1900 and about 1980. For some reason, it just sort of fell off the radar. People weren't paying attention. It was not appreciated as much as it could be. But sometime in the 80s and 90s, it started to enjoy a revival. And people started paying attention again and understanding how great these works really are. And now, of course, there's a tremendous amount of interest and activity. And because of the internet, the imagery is circulating around. And now anytime a good painting comes up for sale, there's tremendous interest. Now, one of my regrets is that back in the earlier days of this business, you might have a chance to buy a good painting at a country auction. Not anymore. Because now the country auctioneers have websites. And so if a good painting comes up for sale, it is widely advertised. Everybody in New York City knows about it. There's a feeding frenzy. And so the old kind of romantic game of finding fresh goods coming right out of grandma and grandpa's home is not happening anymore. But every once in a while, something great still comes up. And there are now some young contemporary painters taking up the Hudson River School again. And so there are young people who are pursuing, you know, the path of the Hudson River School again. And I'm very appreciative and supportive of them. They need to get a paycheck once in a while, mm-hmm. And it's so rewarding for them.
Is there a way, would it be nice a way sometime is to have a little exhibit, have some of these artists come here, where you could place their art, where people would know, here's these new young people.
Right, right.
I don't know how you do it. Find a space, make it an exhibit.
Yep.
Because I would think people would be interested in it.
Yeah. I am a one-person operation, so I've never had the staffing ability to do proper shows requires a big effort. You got to be in touch with all the artists.
Yeah.
You got to rehang the gallery and revamp the website, paint the walls, have the wine and cheese party on Saturday. It's a significant undertaking.
Yeah.
And since I'm also focused on older pictures, and I travel a fair amount, I've never quite had the energy and the capacity to present shows in the gallery. But you're right. It would be nice for me to have, let's say, take five of these temporary artists and say, for the next 6 weeks, we're going to show them in the gallery.
Yeah,
you know, that would be a good thing. It's
wow. Peter, I want to thank you so much.
You're welcome.